Welcome back to Word Up with Dani Katz. I am your host, Dani Katz. I am an author, journalist, and a quantum languaging coach and consultant. What that means is that I teach people how language programs consciousness, how language programs reality at large, and how to transform reality and evolve our consciousness with language. I've also been known to cultivate and share an opinion or two or 12 about culture and consciousness and how they are evolving, devolving, and being manipulated by the powers that were. Here at Word Up, we are devoted to fostering critical thinking while supporting you in becoming your most authentic, empowered, liberated, realized, amazing version of yourself. Our every show aims to expand your consciousness, raise your frequency, sharpen your critical thinking skills, and make you giggle. And think. Given the radical uptick in censorship over the past few years, combined with the complete co-opting slash decimation of my own personal industry, journalism, I started Word Up to have a free speech-friendly platform in which to engage exploratory, solutions-based conversations with visionaries, mystics, original thinkers, and rebel badasses who are helping to make the world more wonderful. The first half of my interviews run between 30 to 90 minutes and are always posted here for free public listening. The second halves are reserved for paid supporters on my Patreon and my Locals platforms, where for as little as $5 a month, you can access all of my second half conversations along with oodles of other bonus content and opportunities to drop in with me, to drop in with our High Vibe tribe, and lots of other awesome things. In addition to interviews, Word Up also features quantum languaging upgrades, planetary service announcements, and propaganda analysis, which I call Spot the Propaganda. Thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing your sacred attention with me and our High Vibe tribe of change makers. Be sure to click that subscribe button so you can stay abreast of our every episode. Thank you for also clicking the like button, for sharing far and wide, and for leaving some kind words as a review as you are authentically inspired. As well, if you are gleaning any value whatsoever from these shows, consider supporting me on Locals and or Patreon. And as you are wanting to learn more about my quantum languaging coaching and consulting services or nab copies of my books, find me on DaniKatz.com as well as on quantumlanguaging.com. Okay, I think that's it for our housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy this episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Dani Katz. Today, I am joined by myself. Yes, we're solo podcasting, going deeper into the language of betterarchy, which is a book, an evolutionary communication paradigm, a superhero tool that is helping us unify, course correct, and flip the script on the whole sham show. Today we're talking about identity being the second of the hierarchical markers that I write about in this book, The Language of Betterarchy. So I'm inspired to talk to us about identity today because it keeps coming up and because it is one of the primary distortions upon which this whole kind of attempted tyrannical takedown of the United States is resting upon. And identity is being used as a wedge to fragment society, to keep us in these kind of insular little pods forged of, you know, homogenized stereotypes and bigotry and assumptions that seek to eradicate our shared humanity. So we're going to talk about it. But before we dive in, before I get into a little bit of reading and some of the
kind of precepts around it, I wanted to share my own personal experiences of identity that inspired today's show. So the first one was I had a meeting with someone who, you know, new friend in town, were neighbors, felt like, okay, I no longer am willing to buy into the divide and to let that be a barrier to relatedness, even if it's like a shallow, spacious kind of surface relatedness. I don't think it's helping us or me personally to use this like larger confusion forged by the mainstream narratives as a means or a reason, as an excuse to not connect. Like, so I'm challenging myself right now to move beyond that. Now, I recognize that I'm probably way more isolated from people who hold different beliefs than other people. I work by myself out of my casita. It's very easy for me to isolate myself. So I'm guessing that other people are getting more practice at this, but for me, it's still relatively new. So at one point during the conversation with this new friend, he mentioned the pronoun thing came up, and I was kind of mocking his pronouns because I'm like, it's pretty obvious you're a man. Like, I don't know why you need to specify that to me. And he's like, well, I believe in equal rights for everyone, especially gay and trans people. And I was like, that's cool. I believe in equal rights for everyone, and I don't do especially. Like, if you're gonna throw out the especially, then you've just put a big chink in this equality you're claiming to stand for. Because if we're gonna do especially around different identitarian subgroups, then that really isn't equality, is it? If you're preferencing gay people or trans people and their rights more so than everyone else's, then that isn't equality. That's privilege, which is hierarchy, was the crux of the whole issue. This guy was a self-identified liberal, and what I was learning in learning more about him and talking to him more and more is like, one of the fundamental differences I see between people who choose to self-identify as liberals and who choose to get their panties in a big huffy bunch around conversations around there only being two genders, or that freedom of speech really shouldn't be controlled, or whatever it is. And the primary difference I see between the people who are holding those beliefs and the people who like aren't really playing the pronoun game, aren't really vying for limits on speech, aren't really virtue signaling in terms of privileging certain groups over the other. What I see, and granted, this is not, I'm not making, attempting to allege any sort of objective assessment. This is just in my own kind of individualized anthropological studies. But what I see is that those who are doubling down on the need to privilege and protect certain groups and control speech fundamentally believe that humans are evil, and that when left to their own devices, humans will do the wrong thing. And what I see, again, just through my own observation, is those who aren't lobbying for daddy government to come in and control speech and tell us what to do and privilege certain classes believe that humans are fundamentally good, and when left to their own devices will do the right thing. And the first time I clued into this was when I did a reading of my Language of Betterarchy book over the holidays, and someone at that reading got extremely triggered around the masculine feminine conversation. And this is the number one conflation point that I see people who do self-identify as liberal having with this body of work that is the Language of Betterarchy, when I break down how hierarchy is a masculine structure by the parameters of masculine and feminine as proposed to us through the Hermetic principle, through physics, through engineering, through machinery, through spirituality, through any of these various disciplines or industries that are working with masculine, feminine energetics, not as embodied men and women on the regular. And what I see is those who have bought into this, there are 89,000 genders and you can just, you know, decide that you can be whatever you want, regardless of your biology, your chromosomes, etc. They cannot cancel, clear, delete. I've noticed a lot of those people have a really tough time separating their indoctrination around human gender with the Hermetic principle of gender and how it applies in terms of living in a dualistic reality construct of equal and opposite forces. We could call those equal and opposite forces yin-yang, masculine-feminine, left brain, right brain. But I notice those who have drunk the, you know, for lack of a better phrase, woke Kool-Aid, that can be a sticking point for them around the language of betterarchy. And so in this reading that I mentioned, where this woman got very, very triggered, she was getting hung up on this piece. And at one point, and I really honor her for asking the question, because she was, you know, as triggered as she was, she had enough self-awareness that she was working with her confusion and her triggers. And she asked me, she said, do you believe that humans are fundamentally good? And that was the piece that was like, oh, okay, this is where we disagree. And seeing how like, oh, I mean, I'm understanding more and more how those who have bought into this, their 89,000 gender narrative, don't believe that humans are going to do the right thing when left to their own devices. And that was reflected big time in my conversation with this new friend, who also believes that humans are fundamentally bad and also admits to be a raging capitalist who will put his money into things that he knows are terrible for humanity and planet Earth. And so what I saw was like, oh, you know, and this is not a new theory that I've been playing with, but like, I feel like it's people who don't believe that humans are good, but also don't believe that they themselves are good, will then overcompensate through virtue signaling, through things like pronouns or saying like, I believe in equal rights, especially for these particular groups, which is just such an asinine statement, because we're sort of throwing in the especially, then that is an equality on any level. But the identity thing came up again. It came up two more times, and I'm going to save the third time for today's post-show throwdown, which is the bonus video I do for my supporters on Patreon and Locals after I do my solo podcast. That one's a little bit spicier, so I'm going to save example number three for the post-show throwdown. But example number two is I did a 3-day contact improv workshop last weekend. Now, I only participated in 2 of the 3 days because I got pretty maxed out on the culture and just the generalized container of the course. But so day one, we had, I'd say there are about 30 of us sitting in a circle. Everyone went around, introduced themselves, and at the teacher's prompting was invited to share their pronouns. Cut to me swallowing the urge to roll my eyes and start gagging because know your audience, I was certainly in the minority in this room. And so day one, only a couple people did the pronouns. Day two, it was interesting. Everyone had pronouns but me. And I was wondering like, wow, what shifted in those 2 days that most of these people who didn't feel the need to take ownership of pronouns, declare ownership of pronouns, do any of that. But whatever. This is what I've noticed about the pronoun game is that they shift according to weather. I was once on a Gene Keys community call and there was a guy whose pronouns were he, him. And one of the ways I like to poke at that pronoun thing is if I'm in a Zoom call and someone has their pronouns next to their name, which I think is so freaking stupid. It's like, how much control do you need? How much extraneous information? You're going to give me your pronouns. You're going to give me your blood type. You're going to give me your favorite food. Like, it's too big of an ask, and it's not even relevant for a freaking Zoom call when we're all talking to one another. But what I do, and let's, I don't even remember his name. Let's say his name was Michael. So I was, so I would say, so as Michael, he, him just said, and I just like crush it all into one name because that's how people are presenting themselves. But in the middle of it was like a 20-minute call, he literally changed his pronouns to they, them. And I was like, wow, did you just have a come to Jesus moment, Michael? That's amazing that like in the middle of a 20-minute call, you just had like a new realization of your gender identity. What an honor it is to have witnessed such a profound transformation during a simple 20-minute Zoom call. But I didn't say this during the contact improv thing because I'm learning to get along better with people whose ideas I think are utterly ridiculous. But it was very clear on day two that the pronoun allegiance was pretty thick in this room. And so it was interesting to watch the teacher because contact improv, like, for those who don't know, and I'm certainly no expert, and I wish I'd learned quite a bit more at this particular course, but it's this very kind of primal, intuitive practice where dancers are sharing bits of contact, but there's no speaking, right? And we're just attuning to subtle shifts in movement, in weight bearing, in intention, in directionality, to be able to find a harmonious flow together, right? So it's very subtle, it's very nuanced, and it's very primal. And it was interesting to see the teacher speaking about how he loved the kind of primacy of that shared primal humanity that tends to really take over in these spaces. But the way that he was doing it was like he was trying to get around the identity thing at the same time and not diminish the identity thing. So I watched him kind of talk himself into like several knots because he was like, well, because identity is important. Don't get me wrong, identity is important. But what this speaks to is like a shared humanity, but he wasn't super willing to own that shared humanity was kind of, like a priority, like a unifying priority that we could all tap into, that took precedence over the identity thing. And I wasn't sure if it was like because of his own identity hangups or because he was honoring the pronoun people in the space. It was really interesting to watch him skirt around the idea that our shared humanity is going to take priority over the fragmenting identity subgroups. And we're going to go deeper into this today. And I actually have an image I prepared. So for those who are listening with your ears, I'm going to do my best to describe it once we get to that point. But for now, I want to read a little bit from the language of betterarchy, just to give us kind of an overarching idea of identity, how it functions as, you know, a divide and conquer enslavement control construct. And then we can kind of go deeper and a little bit more granular. You guys are used to me malapropisming. So thanks for your patience. So identity is the second category of hierarchical languaging that I write about in the language of betterarchy. And just really quickly going through them, because sometimes I forget to do this. And the 10 markers of hierarchical languaging that we learned to transmute in this book, in this body of work: separation, identity, conflict, victimhood, wrong use of will, which we went over on my last podcast. If you haven't checked it out, be sure to tune in. Fixity, lack and limitation, which share their own chapter, fear, and status. Now, identity is a subgroup of separation. And as I've mentioned, probably on multiple podcasts, a lot of these categories, like a lot of the words and phrases and kind of precepts of hierarchical languaging that I mentioned, they will share multiple categories. So identity is a subgroup of separation, right? Anything that I'm speaking about in terms of specifics of identity languaging are all going to also apply to separation, which we can see as kind of like the giant umbrella that's holding a bunch of these different precepts. So, moving into identity. And it starts off with this quote from Krishnamurti that I just love and feel is so appropriate to the topic at hand that I'm going to start off by reading it. Okay. When you call yourself an Indian or a Muslim or a Christian or a European or anything else, you are being violent. Do you see why it is violent? Because you are separating yourself from the rest of mankind. When you separate yourself by belief, by nationality, by tradition, it breeds violence. So a man who is seeking to understand violence does not belong to any country, to any religion, to any political party or partial system. He is concerned with the total understanding of mankind. And that's Jiddu Krishnamurti, who's just one of my favorite enlightened masters, if for no other reason than I love that at some point in any of his recorded talks, he'll like interrupt himself to berate his audience for being too stupid and asleep to truly understand him. He's like the enlightened master who clearly had so much like frustration and angst of the loneliness of where he had evolved himself to. That's at least my interpretation of it. Pause for sip. Separation consciousness arises out of identification and the seemingly benign act of attaching to labels, aspects, images, stories, and stereotypes. Identification happens when we lock into fixed notions of who we or others are, and conflate choices, preferences, characteristics, behaviors, and beliefs with the self, aka the condition of being a specified person or thing. Identification is like the metaphorical difference between seeing a pretty object on the ground, acknowledging its loveliness, and then continuing on my way, or picking up the object, declaring it mine, crafting an elaborate pouch for it and carrying it with me wherever I go. The more we identify confusing aspects and allegiances with the self, the more fragmented we become and the more suffering we create. Why? Because attaching to an identity is the action that sets us up to suffer. One of the Buddha's primary teachings was that attachment is the root of all suffering. In a reality construct ruled by impermanence, attaching to anything is a setup for pain, loss, and frustration. Attaching an identity construct to any of the various ever-shifting aspects that coalesce to create our concept of self is to lock ourselves in a stagnant cage of our own forging and to set ourselves up for a great big bunch of suffering. When we grasp on to any one morsel of our infinite I/me-ness or us/we-ness, and then go about crafting an identity construct around it, we become attached. This attachment creates what physicists call a quantum entanglement. Now I go into the whole quantum entanglement thing, which I'm going to skip for now. And for those who are or are not familiar with how I present quantum entanglements in my work, I'll just give you a really quick example. I was actually talking to a girlfriend over the weekend who referenced my cancel PTSD, right? So she's referencing the post-traumatic stress that she has incurred at the hands of being canceled by various communities, media, payment processors, you know, generalized road for the outspoken truther these days. Now, when she says my cancel PTSD, she is creating a quantum entanglement between herself and the PTSD She has experience. She is still in the process of transmuting, right? So notice the difference when I say my, you know, my cancel PTSD, right? It's just what I, you know, the example I gave in the book. It's like crafting an elaborate pouch for my cancel PTSD and clinging to it and carrying it with me forever, wherever I go, versus saying the PTSD that I'm still in the process of transmuting, that I'm still working through, right? So the shift there is changing the my to the impersonal the. It's not mine. I don't want anything to do with PTSD. It's the PTSD. And notice how I'll say that I am transmuting, that I am still moving through, right? I will use an ing verb to put it in motion, to let my subconscious mind know, hey, we don't want to hang out here with this PTSD that long because it's not ours. It's nothing to identify with. It's nothing to cling to. It's something that I'm choosing to move through quickly. And when I tell my subconscious mind that, it organizes itself as well as reality to meet me in this impersonal, temporary state of moving through the PTSD. So, high level overview of quantum entanglements. Now, what is really important is the fragmentation section. And, you know, I almost made fragmentation its own chapter in this book, like its own category of hierarchical languaging. And, at this point, it's folded in. It actually appears in two different chapters here. And today we're going to be talking about fragmentation in terms of identity. So you're going to start to get to get a feel for how fragmentation works as yet another hierarchical distortion. Hierarchy is fostered by fragmentation, a tool the social engineers use to divide and undermine the populace. Fragmentation fuels disaffection and incoherence, keeping us in a state of stuttering discordance, wherein flow, ease, harmony, and momentum evade us. We can think of fragmentation like a skipping record or a speed bump in the road. It's that moment when the flow is interrupted by an unexpected hiccup or impediment that disrupts the momentum and pulls us out of our experience. As any athlete or high performer knows, momentum is pretty much everything, especially when it comes to achieving flow states. Fragmentation pervs our momentum by throwing a sudden wrench into the action at hand. As a social engineering strategy, fragmentation operates on multiple levels, dividing and dehumanizing while activating internal dissonance as a response to hiccups in flow, logic, and acculturation as a deliberate means of subverting and degrading our efforts to thrive, unify, harmonize, and evolve. Identification creates fragmentation, cordoning off our human family into smaller and smaller sections and subgroups, separating us from each other, as well as our shared humanity in the process. Identification creates more us-them divides, confusing folks into forgetting that we are one human family who all bleed, laugh, cry, die, suffer, orgasm, giggle, and want the best for ourselves and our loved ones. The fragmentation identification foments is a massive impediment to unification. Now, before I dive into the language of identification, which we are going to get into, I want to share the image that I prepared to help demonstrate this. So for those listening with your ears, worry not, I'm going to do my best to describe this because this is an inclusive podcast and I wouldn't want you to feel left out. So what we are looking at, for those who are listening with their ears, we're looking at two side-by-side charts, and the chart on the left is a unity rating scale, and you can imagine it like a funnel that's narrower at the bottom and wider at the top, and the wideness at the top has a line that we're calling max unity, and then the narrowness at the bottom is what we're calling minimum unity. And next to this chart, we're looking at various kind of umbrella arcs that all are shorthand for identification and fragmentation. So the first one, which is kind of our largest umbrella, is Earthling, right? Every being on this planet is an Earthling, whether it's a centipede, a human being, a tiger, a bacteria, a parasite, a dandelion, right? All of these are going to be held under the maximum unity umbrella called Earthlings, because we're all the beings who are inhabiting planet Earth. Now we take a drop down, kind of a big drop down in our unity scale, when underneath the Earthling umbrella, we have the human being umbrella, right? So that includes all the human beings here. So that is obviously a smaller subset of Earthlings, because it doesn't include reptiles or amphibians or, you know, any of the other creatures that aren't human beings, right? So we've just, as far as our unity scale, right, we've just created less unity, because now we're moving into the subgroup called human beings. And then from there, we have an even smaller umbrella called American, right? So that goes way down on the unity rating scale, because Americans, while unifying everyone who lives in this country, it obviously doesn't include people in Nigeria, people in Malaysia, people in Guatemala, people in Canada, right? Right. So all of those other human beings and Earthlings are now not included in the further fragmented, smaller, less unified subgroup called American. And then underneath the American umbrella, we have these four categories, and these are just random, so no need to go panty bunching here, but these subgroups that qualify in this image as minimum unity. And these subgroups are vegan, Hindu, bipolar, and gay, right? So they're gonna be, if the subgroup is vegan Americans, right? That's gonna be a much smaller group than Americans, right? Or than human beings who also identify as vegans, right? We're creating more and more fragmentation as we divide ourselves into these subgroups. Same with Hindu, right? American Hindus is gonna be a much smaller subgroup than all Hindus, right? Or American Christians or whatever, right? It's very specific. Same with bipolar, Americans who identify as bipolar, right? So that identitarian subgroup creates more fragmentation in terms of unity. Now, it's not to say that there isn't going to be some value in terms of understanding bipolar tendencies for someone who is undergoing treatment to come into more psycho-emotional balance, right? There might be some use for that in a clinical setting. But when it comes to taking on identities, not only does, you know, identifying as bipolar, that's going to tether me to all of the stereotypes, narratives, and kind of worst case scenario statistics that go along with the bipolar pathology, right? So again, when we're talking about identification, there's going to be the human being who's exhibiting symptoms that are similar to bipolar, right? Or the human being who is exhibiting bipolar symptoms, right? There's no division there. We have not chipped away at any unity, because we're describing this underneath the shared umbrella of human being, right? But when we go into, and this is what's so tricky about pathologies, there's such an inclination there to create an identity construct from it. So instead of being a human being who's dealing with psychic weather, I'm bipolar, right? So by saying I'm bipolar, that's going to allow me to attach to that identity construct. It's going to allow me to create a quantum entanglement between myself and these symptoms, right? Because I'm not talking about them as temporary symptoms. I've made an identity construct around I am bipolar, right? So going back to that quantum entanglement, a quantum entanglement is a physics term wherein one thing cannot be described without the other. They become bound together, right? So if I am bipolar, then that bipolar is part of my existential isness, right? Instead of being a psychic weather pattern that I have experienced in the past or that I sometimes experience, now it becomes conflated with my Danny-ness, right? That's the danger of all of these identity constructs and labels, is instead of holding them loosely in such a way that we can put them down, right? I have a pen. I sometimes use a pen. I could put it down at any second. If I am a pen, I can't put it down. It's got to be stapled to my person. I'm carrying it with me at all times, right? That's what identity constructs do. And the last one in terms of our, you know, fragmenting subgroup is gay, right? So now we're talking about gay Americans. That's this smaller fragmented subgroup that's separate from all Americans, that's separate from all gay human beings, right? It's very specific and creates less unity in the larger conversation. Now, again, with all of these identity constructs, none of them are issues as long as we hold them loosely, right? Notice if I'm clinging to the pen, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. I can't put it down. If it's like a pen is here, pen is a useful tool. Sometimes right now I don't need a pen. I can put it down because I'm holding it loosely because I haven't identified with the pen. So I just wanted to give us this handy dandy visual so we could understand when we're talking about unifying as a people, which is absolutely what is being called for right now, given, you know, this kind of oligarchical, is that a word? Given this giant, like, civil rights power grab we see coming through the oligarchy and a certain small sex, we, our strongest, smartest move right now is to unify as Americans, as human beings, as earthlings, right? I would say, from my perspective, first and foremost, as Americans, so that we can take care of, you know, the unconstitutional liberty grabs and the nonsense happening here on our soil. Once we get on, you know, more stable, less tenuous ground, then we can come together with the rest of the human beings on the rest of the globe to see how we can safeguard humanity as a whole. But again, putting our own oxygen mask on first is going to be a lot smarter and give us a lot more strength. And that's why we see this whole, like, all these offshore wars serving as like the perfect distraction, because all of our attention and outrage is being outsourced, leaving much less attention units to focus on, hey, we're having our own issues here on our own soil in a really big way. But just for us to see how all these fragmented identitarian subgroups are anathema to unification, they do the exact opposite of unification because they cordon us off into smaller and smaller subgroups with their own rules, their own language, their own walls up, which makes the task of unification infinitely more difficult. So I realize that what I'm proposing is the exact opposite of what mainstream consensus reality would have us buy into, which is that identity is awesome and let's fragment into smaller and smaller and smaller subgroups. So it's not just like podcasters, it's not just women podcasters, it's not just Jewish women podcasters, it's Jewish women podcasters who have giant gaps in their teeth and small feet and a preference for water activities, right? And so the ridiculousness of shoving myself into a box so narrow is isolation. Like, how many other podcasters, how many other people are going to qualify for all of those subgroups, right? So we see this where it's like, you know, I shared this in my pop propaganda course where it's like, it's not just trans rights now. It's like Latinx trans rights, people, it's Hindu trans rights. It's like, so, and I saw this, you know, honestly, where I saw this, guys, is in the Gene Keys community. I saw this in the last Gene Keys course that I did, where before every community call, they would play a recorded 5-minute, it was so freaking infantilizing, a recorded 5-minute video that would remind us to be inclusive of indigenous people and to be inclusive of people who are gender non-normative or whatever it is. And I was just like, are you freaking kidding me? I've been in this community for almost 10 years and you're increasing the complexity. Like everything's getting more and more complicated. If now before every call, you have to list every subgroup we're not supposed to insult, this can go on forever. And please be mindful to not insult differently abled people. And please be mindful to not insult left-handed people. And please be mindful to not insult freckled people. It's like, where does it end, right? And so kowtowing to that lowest common denominator, identitarian victim bullshit only creates more complication, more complexity, which is actually a shadow, not a gift, not a city in the Gene Keys paradigm. And I just watched this whole thing get more complicated, more infantilizing, more watered down. In every chapter of The Language of Betterarchy, I introduce the precept, like the hierarchical concept, be it lack, be it scarcity, be it separation. And then after that, I go into the specifics of that type of languaging. So with that in mind, I'm just going to read us a little bit from The Language of Identification. The language of identification delineates a class of words and phrases that foster attachment to ideas, experiences, archetypes, and avatars, which can engender suffering, division, fragmentation, and limitation. While I generally advise eschewing identification as much as possible, not every identity construct is necessarily deleterious. If identifying as a wordsmith has me feeling expansive and delightful, then the act isn't necessarily doing me a disservice. If, however, I'm being invited to volunteer on a cob building project and I defer to my identity as a writer as a means of dodging those more laborious tasks, now I'm out of integrity with the identity construct that I'm wielding as an excuse to separate myself from the endeavor slash mission. And this is something that we're going to get into in the post-show throwdown. How often I see people using their identity constructs as shields, as weapons, as excuses to withhold compassion, to withhold empathy, right? Like the whole identity construct thing is being like, it's so weaponized right now, but I see it being so abused by people as like a defense mechanism and as an excuse to not look inward or take responsibility for where they're creating disharmony. So ultimately, it's on us to choose which identity constructs are serving us and which ones are not. A task which invites us to hone in on the language of identification, which resources us to discern if and when identification is helpful and appropriate. So, you know, this is a realm of limitation, and that is an illusion, to be sure. And we all chose to incarnate in a third dimensional realm. So I'm personally not a fan of like feigning enlightenment or really accessing enlightenment and removing myself into a cage and like not getting myself in the 3D mud. Like that's just not how I'm choosing to play the Earth game. So at some times I'm going to take on temporary identity constructs. And I saw this actually going back to the contact improv workshop, where the teacher did not want to foster hierarchy. And he didn't want to separate himself from the rest of the class by declaring himself a leader. He didn't want to be the boss of anyone. So he wanted it to be very egalitarian and kind of communist. So there were several times during the 2 days that I was there, he would say, like, what do you guys feel like doing? Where are we at now? And it would be like, it was basically super inefficient. And I definitely did not get what I wanted to get out of that workshop because of the teacher's awareness of identity, right? Awareness of hierarchy, which I give him major props for, but in a choice to not step into that game in a way that would serve everyone, right? So his whole thing was like, I'm not the boss of you guys, so I don't want to boss you around. And I actually did have a conversation around it where, like, no, of course you're not the boss of us, and of course we're all equal. However, in this temporary context called you're facilitating a workshop that we've all paid you for, there's already an inferred hierarchy and an inferred role that you're going to be stepping into for the 3 days that we're all participating together. Now, you know, so he took it to an extreme in like, I'm not the leader, I'm not above you guys, so I'm not going to actually take on a leadership role within this context, which in my opinion didn't really work. Now, it also wouldn't have worked if he was clinging to an identity of being a teacher, of being a leader, and came in with kind of a holier-than-thou arrogance, right? And I know better than you, and was treating us as though we were kind of on a lower rung of the hierarchical ladder, right? That wouldn't work either. So it's like, we don't want to go to any extremes with identity. We don't want to cling to them and like, hold it so tightly where, like, I'll see a lot of Jewish people doing this right now around the Israel situation, and I'm not weighing in. I don't have a dog in this. I'm not there. I've never been there. I don't really trust my screens. That being said, I've held the opinion for a long time that the American relationship with Israel is kind of troubling, and the fact that we are consistently funding their military, that people in this country are not given their First Amendment right, not given, but like the First Amendment right to criticize Israel is not really honored in this country. And I've spoken about this before, so I don't want to really go down that rabbit hole. But, you know, take people like Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro, who are right now being criticized pretty hardcore for standing up loudly and publicly for free speech. But now when there's criticism of Israel, now they're lobbying for controlled speech, right? So betraying a hypocritical perspective. What is that about? Are they liars? No. Are they bad people? No. I mean, I don't know them. Maybe they are, but I'm not, that's not what I'm assessing from this. They are attached to their identities as Jews, right? It's just attachment. I also identify as a Jew, but I'm not attached to that identity. I'm not clinging to that identity so tightly that I've confused my existential validity, my existential safety with being Jewish, right? I hold it quite loosely, which allows me to see more clearly, you know, from a wide angle lens of like, oh, the phrase anti-Semitism has been weaponized and is not being used in a way that feels kosher to me personally. I don't think that what's happening in terms of the politics of Israel has anything to do with being a Jew or Jewishness, but because I'm not attached to that identity, I have more spaciousness to more critically discern the kind of larger conversation. Were I attached to that identity, it would narrow my critical thinking faculties, because when we're identified something, we're conflating our existence with it, right? So if I am conflating you know, the politics of Israel with Jewishness, while at the same time being identified and clinging tightly to my Jewish heritage, that's going to narrow my own critical thinking faculties in terms of understanding the bigger scheme of things. And so just noticing that, like, we're all, I don't know how realistic it is to drop all identity constructs. I play with it myself. And it's, you know, from one perspective, I do my best, and I have been deliberately unidentifying for decades now, noticing that the more I unidentify, right, the less that I identify with, the more freedom I have to make different choices. You know, one of the standard examples I use around identity is if I identify as a libertarian, I am a libertarian, then when I go into a voting booth, it's going to be infinitely harder for me to vote for any candidate who isn't libertarian, even if their policies jive with my own priorities and values. But I've just made it that much harder for me to make a different choice by way of identifying as a libertarian. Now, were I to switch up the languaging and say, I've historically voted libertarian, or I tend to align with libertarian values more so than any of the other political parties. Now I'm describing it as an action. I tend to align. I have voted, right? I'm moving away from I am, the identity construct, and moving into verbs. Here's what I do. Here's what I've done, right? So when we're talking about things from the standpoint of verbs versus the identity construct I am, there's more spaciousness to make a different choice, right? I very often talk about the vegan thing. I am vegan. I'm not going to eat meat. I prefer to eat a plant-based diet. I tend to mostly eat a plant-based diet. I tend to eat only plant-based diet. I'm still talking about what I do from the standpoint of identifying as a human being. And so these are just some tools that you can use to help unidentify, is stop talking about the identity construct and conflating it with who we are, but more like, what are we doing? What are we aligning ourselves with? And the more that we can, like, relinquish the need to, not even the need, but the inclination to conflate our existence with all these flimsy, you know, choices and beliefs and allegiances, the more we get to unify. So for anyone who's talking about unification, who claims to care about unification, identity is going to be an impediment to that identification. And so what I'm always urging, you know, my clients to do, my students to do, is go to, like, if you are speaking to a single person or to a group of people, you're addressing a group of people, go to the largest identification umbrella you can find. Like, go to that umbrella that's going to hold the most amount of people in it, and that's the identity construct we can work within. You know, so for me, that's going to be human beings, right? I'm talking to human beings. Now, I'm not in the marketing conversation of niching or anything like that, but when I'm talking to people, I'm talking about, you know, fellow human beings, including those who vote Republican, including those who vote Democrat, including those who love the Western medical paradigm, including those who are suspicious of the Western medical paradigm, right? So I'm including those seemingly different groups under the same umbrella called human beings, called we, called us, right? So, you know, the smartest, quickest way to transmute fragmentation and division is to create the largest possible umbrella and hold all of us within the beautiful cooling shade of that umbrella. That's gonna, what that does, it just fosters the most unity. So it's the complete opposite of fragmentation. It's like, That's great that you love having sex with people who are of the same gender. Like, we're still human beings. Like, can we have these larger political conversations under the umbrella of human beings, and all the shared humanity that binds us? That's my basic shtick around identity. I just want to check and see if there's anything else I want to read us. I mean, just to give you guys kind of an overview of what's included in the identification section, as far as, what are some of the languaging habits that clue us into identification? Personal pronouns. So I already talked about that in terms of my, right? My ADHD, my arthritis, right? Like, why would I want to conflate my identity with these crummy things? My ex-husband. Like, why would I want to create a quantum entanglement between myself and someone who I've decided to part ways with, relationship-wise? I'm a cancer survivor, right? That's not so much a personal pronoun, but just noticing, like, why would I choose to define myself by what I'm guessing by all accounts was like a terrible experience? Like, of all the ways to define myself, why would I do it by self-identifying with something terrible and painful and scary? Like, it just doesn't make sense in terms of, authority being our divine right to write our stories however we choose, right? So I'm never going to ascribe the personal pronoun my to anything that isn't serving me. I get this a lot around the anger that I am still in the process of transmuting, right? We all come in with shadows. All of us, there are no exceptions. It's not my anger. It's the anger I've been tasked to learn from in this incarnation, but it's not mine. Anger simply is. Sometimes it moves through me, but I don't feel any need to take ownership of it or conflate it with my own identity. What else? We have labels, right? We just went through the labels: Republican, vegan, Jewish, Aquarius, right? That's one that I'm still in the process of letting go of myself. Types, kinds, and sorts. So I'm going to end it on types, kinds, and sorts because that's what we're about to get into in the post-show throwdown. Thank you so much for tuning in to the first chunk of today's podcast. As you're inspired to go deeper into the language of identity, meet me over at my Patreon and/or my Locals for the post-show throwdown. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com, patreon.com/dannycats. As you're inspired to learn more about my work, you can find more about my books and podcasts at dannycats.com. You can learn more about what it's like to work with me one-on-one in a coaching capacity to bring me into your organization as a consultant on quantumlanguaging.com. Lastly, also courses. Courses can be found on dannycats.com. Lastly, I'm inviting you to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com because it is the very best way to ensure that you and I stay in touch amidst so much big tech thought policing, sham show shenanigans, etc. That does it. Thanks so much for tuning in, for sharing your sacred attention with me, for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. Have a rockin' day. And for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, for sharing, for commenting, and for leaving some kind words as a review, as you are authentically inspired, as you are receiving any value from my podcast, as you dig it, as you listen regularly, consider supporting me on Patreon and/or Locals, where for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half podcast interviews, as well as oodles of bonus content. Your support really goes a long way in supporting me as a journalist and an independent content creator navigate her way through a really crunchy time in terms of free speech. And as you are wanting to learn more about my work in the world, my books, my products, my quantum languaging coaching and consulting, you can find me at dannycats.com.
as well as quantumlanguaging.com. And if you're not down with a membership patronage platform and want to send me one-time donation, you can use the Bitcoin link if it actually appears on your podcast listening platform. You could also send me a one-time donation by way of PayPal at dannykatz@pm.me or by way of Venmo, where my username is Sadie Bloom. Again, your support means the world and makes a massive, massive difference when it comes to continuing to share this work with the world. Thank you for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that you are omniscopic amazingness and for having a rockin' day. See you next time, superstars.